The early days of podcasting were extraordinary. Celebrities had no idea what to do with the internet. And because mainstream representation of LGBTQ folks was slim to none, the online world saw an eruption of talk shows where people could go in depth about queer issues for everyone, everywhere.
Before Lizzo preached the gospel of body positivity, before the drag race and trans explosion, and even before folks started cashing in on their sex appeal on patronage sites, one of our favorite guests on Feast of Fun was Kennedy Monroe, the voluptuous diva who worked the scene producing her own singles and hosting a talk show on trans issues on YouTube with her gal pal, Raina Valentino.
Sadly, we had a falling out with Kennedy Monroe in 2008, and then she posted a video asking people to cancel Feast of Fools. One could say she was even a pioneer of cancel culture.
Today, musician, drag performer, and trans pioneer Kennedy Monroe comes back on Feast of Fun to talk about her extraordinary decade, her new single, Kings and Queens, losing the love of her life, finding love again, and finding the joy in mentoring young trans people.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Before we begin, let's listen to trans pioneer Kennedy Monroe with her single Sickening from 2008.
Hello.
Hi, is this Kennedy Monroe?
Yes, it is.
After so many years, it's so good to hear your voice.
Yes, you too. I'm excited.
Where are you living these days?
I'm currently in Texas.
In a secret, undisclosed location?
In the woods.
Hi, Kennedy. It's Mark. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to hear you guys. Long time.
Now, for a while, you were living in Chicago, then Austin, Texas, then Las Vegas and California. What got you back to Texas?
Well, in 2014, my husband, he wasn't my husband. He was my fiance. He passed away. And so
that was Sean?
Yes, that was Sean. Mm-hmm. So I had been with Sean since 2008. So he passed away in 2014. So after his death, I needed to figure out a lot of things. And so I decided to go back to my family and try to let them help fix me.
Oh, so you felt broken.
Oh, yeah. I was very broken.
Kennedy, I can't even begin to imagine how hard it must have been to lose somebody you love so dearly, so unexpectedly.
Yeah. So it was like, I look back at it and it was a learning experience. It was someone that I really loved and cared for and taught me a lot about myself. Even though he passed away, and he passed away because of his addiction. Mm. It like came out of the blue really fast. Literally, we were out in August for my birthday having dinner and we were walking back home and I looked at him and he looked yellow. And his eyes had yellow in them. And I said, why are you yellow? And he made me take a picture of him. And he looked at it and he goes, oh my God, I have jaundice. And I was like, well, what is that? And he's like, it's like the yellowing of my skin and my eyes. He's like, I gotta go to the hospital. So I think like the next day we went to the hospital and they basically told him his liver was failing and that they had to do something. They had to do surgery on him and they took him and did surgery and he had to do where they pump in your blood and pump out your blood type thing.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, like clean your blood or something.
I forgot what it's called. They take it out. Dialysis.
I guess
dialysis. There you go. I couldn't think of it. So he's in the hospital doing dialysis, and then he came home for a week, and I had to take him every day to dialysis. Well, like three, or four, like every other day, he had to go to dialysis. And one day we were coming back home, and he just fell. He had to have brain surgery, and it just
from there,
he came out of it fine. But he was like, he was in intensive care, and he was doing fine. And I'd, you know, I'd stay in the hospital and then come home and take care of our dogs and cats, and then go back to the hospital.
Was this when you guys were living in Las Vegas?
Yes, we were living in Las Vegas, and so we didn't have a car. So I'd basically get on a bus, go to the hospital, come home, get on the bus, go. So it was a bunch of different things. Also, like doing my career, trying to support us because he didn't work. So I had to support us. It was a lot going on. And
were you guys insured?
Well, actually, what was good is we were actually on, we had just earlier that year, Obamacare, I think it was the first time Obamacare came. It was like the same time Obamacare became really big, and we decided we were going to enroll in it. And because financially we didn't have the money, we qualified in Las Vegas for Medicaid. So we were on Medicaid. So it was a blessing in the sense that they took care of him and we didn't have to worry about paying anything. And so when he was in the hospital and intensive care, everybody was really good to him. But he was, Sean was very smart and almost too smart. That the reason I think he was an alcoholic was because so many things were going on in his head. He was always, he would tell me sometimes he couldn't sleep because things were just processing in his head faster, or it was just a bunch of things going on. And so I think he felt like he drank to calm that down. And he was a magician. That's how I met him. So he was always thinking of new brilliant ways to be a magician. And I always try to push him to like, go be a magician. And that's why we moved to Vegas, was because I was like, okay, he's here around all these great magicians. And, you know, he got to do a lot of things. It just came to an end, and he had the brain surgery, and then he was doing fine. So they moved him out of intensive care. And when they did that, there was no supervision. One day I was working and I came up and literally he was in his bed with feces all over the bed because no one came to change him. No one came to check on him. And so he was touching, he kept playing with his head where he had staples in from the surgery, and he kept wanting to take him out. And so that all coincided that he got an infection that just took over his whole body. And he passed away. But if he didn't get a liver transplant, they said he would have passed away in 6 months from the time before he had brain surgery. So it was like he was going to go. It was just like he went, instead of 6 months, he went in a month. And it was a lot for me to deal with, you know, because on top of that, I'm dealing with what I have to do, take care of my dogs, take care of him, but also make money at the same time so I could live. Sure. So yeah, so it was a lot. So when he passed, I just called my, well, when he was, they told me he had a week to live. They said Thursday he would pass. I called my grandma and I said, I just don't know what to do. And my dad just happened to be off of work. he decided he was going to pursue a new career. So he took out his 401k and had money so he could get on a plane and come be with me. But I've never been close to my father, and my father is an alcoholic. And so literally my father got off the plane drunk.
Oh, wow.
So I had to deal with my father at the same time so I had to babysit my father. And
so instead of helping you, it was another person you had to manage at that time.
Yes, I feel like I've always been a care person. So I've always just been, because I'm the oldest of five, I've always taken care of everything. So like with Sean, I took care of Sean. With my dad, when he's around, I take care of him. It's like, it's always been about taking care of others. After Sean passed, it was time to focus on me.
Let's actually focus on you. So we met you in the early days of podcasting back in 2007, just 2 years after our show had started. We were called Feast of Fools. We met you through Tracy Tyler at the time and Reina Valentino.
Valentino?
Valentino, like the
It was like with the an A at the end.
Okay,
an O or A?
I think it was with an A. Is it with an A or
no?
Valentino.
All right,
honey, I know my entertainers.
You guys have the same birthday.
She's related. Yeah, because she's related to Sasha Valentino. It's Valentina.
Well, on Facebook, she's Reina Valentino with an O.
Oh, then maybe it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So listen, she and I have the same birthday.
Yeah.
And so we met you. It was really exciting times. And I explained to people who Kennedy Monroe is that you, in many ways, were a trans pioneer in terms of online content. So with you and Reina Valentino, you guys were doing a show that... We can't say the title on the
Say it no more.
But
I think it's okay for you to say to say it.
Yes, it was Tranny Talk 101. But of course, because of the times and everything, and that's what's so hard for me, even with my music, there's two songs that I have out that have that word in it. So it's kind of like, but that word is, I try to tell trans people that you have to understand, when like me and Reina Valentino or any of these girls that were in that time or before even my time, it was a whole sisterhood. And that's how you communicated to each other in a room. You say, hey, tranny, hey, girl, instead of hey, girl, it was hey, tranny. It was it was just that lingo that you said to people. And I feel like because of the adult world, so many girls felt like it was a word like shemale that was very offensive. And so for so long, I grappled with, I don't mind the word tranny. I'm not going to call you a tranny if you don't want to be called a tranny. Just like, you know, black people using the N-word. There's some people that like that will use it towards each other that are in that community, but some don't like it. And so that's the kind of thing. But the older I get, the more I'm opening up to the way the world is revolving and changing, especially under the trans umbrella. So it's like, it's a whole learning experience for me because I transitioned at 20 and that was 2000. So the world was totally different than it is now. It was like just at the beginning of internet and being a boom.
But the show, let's call it Tea Talk 101, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tea Talk 101.
And part of it is, you know, in a lot of ways, it was you and Reina wanting to expand on the ability to talk about what your experiences were like as transgender women and as entertainers. And as fully realized sexual beings. And you guys had Margaret Cho on your show sitting on a sofa going, what is going on here? And, you know, and the beautiful thing, I just watched the video to prepare for the show, that there was a magical time is that these big A-list entertainers didn't understand what the internet was, didn't understand the ramifications. And then so people like you and I could go up to them and interview them. And it was like a really magical time.
It was. And, you know, when we were doing Tea Talk 101, it just became a concept of us girls it actually started the night of the Oscars that one year. We were just like playing on the video. I'd already been doing like YouTube videos, lip syncing and doing makeup in front of YouTube. But it wasn't until like, I think Fausto, you brought it up. Maybe you were like, you and Reina or someone needs, y'all need to do a podcast that trans people can like see or someone can see. And they really wasn't doing video podcasts either. So it's kind of like, oh, we're going to do a video podcast and we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about drag and we're going to talk about being trans. And we took the camera out with us on the bus and the train and we did.
I remember we
took it into the bathroom at Mary's with you guys.
Well, do you remember when we were upstairs at Mary's and I think you filmed Fausto and he tried on the continental crown of was Mercedes. Is Mercedes have a last name, or is she just Tyler? Mercedes Tyler.
Yeah, maybe Tyler. Yeah,
yeah. So she had won the crown, and she was, I don't know where she was, but
she was up front.
Her crown was
taking care of the stage
and backstage. And I put it on my face, and I was like. Like trying to do a Hannibal Lecter.
Because the crowd was covering like a cage over your face.
Yeah. And she was mad.
But also,
about
too, you
that.
Also put it on your head. So and you mad. Kind of like, in some ways, you kind of imitated her a little bit.
Well, I was crowning myself.
You were
the
crowning
winner.
Yourself the winner, yeah. Talking very hoity toity as though you were the entitled queen.
Yeah.
And you know what? I have to tell you, Kennedy, our relationship with Mercedes ever since that video has never been the same ever. I think she still holds that against us.
Yeah, I ran into her the other street. Other day on the street, she was having lunch, and I give her a big hug, and I was like, "Honey, how are you doing?" And there's still a lot of caution. Like she felt that was a huge betrayal for us to like clowning around with her stuff backstage and put her on the
Miss Continental. Because it was Continental Plus or just Continental?
Yeah, Continental Plus.
Okay, Miss Continental.
But it was a hard, you know, and now in hindsight, it was probably not the right thing for us to do if we wanted to.
No.
At least we didn't steal it like somebody stole Sharon Needles'
crown. Yeah, there you go. So it's like we're, I mean, but that was the heyday of doing these things. We were experimenting and doing things that people never seen or done before. So, like, yeah, maybe a lot of people in the world maybe didn't know who Mercedes was, or maybe didn't know what Continental was. And so it's just like a way of just like bridging that whole thing. And I think that was the kind of thing too we also wanted to do with T-Talk, was basically show the world, or show the community, that trans women are actually drag performers as well, and that we're valid, because that it constantly is still a point that's brought up, because like shows like RuPaul won't cast a trans person, or the person that is trans has to come out trans after they've done the show, or as Peppermint did, came out during the show, but she had already been kind of trans before the show. So it was like, but she couldn't really talk about it.
Peppermint was openly trans when she was cast on it, but she had not had, I think for RuPaul, the big issue is breasts.
Titties.
Yeah, titties.
Because you look at these girls, like their asses are pumped, their cheeks are pumped, their lips are pumped. They've probably, some of them have probably had facial feminization surgery, you know? Or the likes of it or something. So there's been a lot of cosmetic surgery done. It's just that she's just hung up on tits. And if you look at this season, she even made Michelle Visage get rid of her tits for season 12.
Oh, my God.
She's just like nobody over a size cup A anymore.
That's so not true.
It's
but
true.
Anyway.
Michelle won't admit it. Michelle will say, like, I got them out for health reasons.
But for the record, Michelle Visage publicly stated that she was having health concerns, and she's removed her.
Well, she's just providing cover for Rue. I'm teasing, of course. But, you know.
But so did you see, you saw the latest episode, the first of season 12.
I've started watching it. I'm at the end of the first part of the first girls.
And part of me with Dragula now sort of cementing and showing that, and you know, Camp Wanakiki and other projects.
Cooking with drag queens.
We'll get to that. You have a lot of influence on that show. I don't know if you're aware of it, but but anyways, I just think it's like, it's kind of like watching gay men, young gay men in very expensive costumes, trying to figure out how to have an entertainment career. And a lot of them are standing there in the show. And this is the meat and potatoes of Drag Race at this point is rich or well-connected young gay men saying, I don't know how to dance. I don't know how to sew. I don't know how to do anything, but give me money.
My God, let me go
tour after this is over with, and I'll make everything back.
And you know, it's a testament to the unbreakable human spirit that some really amazing artists have come out of that show. But who in the early days of the internet, you didn't wait for RuPaul's Drag Race or anything like that. You just started releasing singles. And one of the songs that one of your first songs was the song voluptuous diva.
Yes. Now it's like coined that I'm the voluptuous diva.
Do you remember how nervous you were when you first went into the recording studio to record that song?
Yes. I actually literally was on the L train coming home. I called my friend in Houston and I said, because he told me he had a producer friend from Mexico that was looking for someone to do dance tracks with. And I kept on saying, well, I want to do something like Jeffree Star, RuPaul, because it was MySpace days and Jeffree Star was really big. And I was like, I want to do something like that, but I want to do something that's more meaningful. Jeffree Star was way too far, like, in your face, that I'm like, I like fucking boys and I look like this and all this stuff. And so I was like, I want to do something that's meaningful. I guess that's what I always want to do. I want to do something that's meaningful, but I was also in a way trans based. So I was like, I told my friend, I said, I want to do a song that's about a girl that has curves and is proud of her body and stuff like that. And so he wrote Voluptuous Diva. And so I fly to Houston to record it, and we're in this apartment recording. And I've never recorded a song. I've never done anything. And I remember they put on the headphones and they're like telling me what to do, and I'm doing it. And they keep on telling me, you're not doing it right. You got to find the beat. And then you got to talk. You have to do it on the beat.
Sing and I was on like, well, what's sing on the beats.
And I'm like, well, what's the beat? What am I didn't even know what a beat was. So I was like, they're like, it was, I think Voluptuous Diva went like, I think it took us like 5 hours to record it, and it just took a lot, and they had to cut pieces together because I just wasn't getting it. And then I know the next day I recorded Skin, and because Skin is more sexual based, I felt like I got it. Well, and
isn't Skin a reference to Venus Extravaganza from Paris Is Burning, saying, you touch the skin, honey, touch the skin all over, you can't have this.
It might be, but originally my friend who wrote Voluptuous Diva wrote Skin, and the reason he wrote Skin was he wanted a song that went with his underwear fashion line. So he wanted a song.
I forgot about the underwear.
And so he wanted a song. So if you see the video on my YouTube page, it has like these guys in this like nude underwear, and it was like this, it was about this nude underwear that made you feel it was comfortable, but it also was nude. So
that underwear was unusual because it was kind of like what we like traditionally call flesh colored. Like it was peachy, peachy, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he gave us a pair, but I felt like a little pig when I wore it because it was almost like the color of like a pig skin or something. You know?
Yes. Yeah. I know. So the purpose
of the skin underwear was underwear that looked like you were naked, but it made. It, the consequence of it was kind of comical.
Yeah.
In the way that it looked.
Yeah. And I remember when you did the song, you told us that you were real nervous about the song. And then they're just like, and then they just gave me a bottle of vodka and I drank the bottle of vodka.
Yes,
and then I just
sang
on the beats. So Faust and I walk around the apartment and just go, sing on the beats.
I forgot about that. That there was like, I just had to keep listening to the beat. And so that was so funny. But now it's funny as I can listen to any song and I can hear the beat. Whereas prior to ever recording, I never knew what a beat was or anything. So it's like now when my producer I work with now, who did Fierce Beat Face and Sickening and just did Fembot last year, and then we just did Kings and Queens together. Mm. He will just throw me tracks and I'll throw him lyrics. And so we go back and forth. We really collaborate well together. We've never met each other in person. I do all my recording in my house and then I send it to him, and then he loves when I ad lib. So I'm always doing ad libs because eventually the ad lib goes somewhere in the song and I don't even realize I record it.
Now the song Fierce Beat Face, what year did that come out? Do you remember?
2009.
So this is before the term was used, beating your face.
Yeah,
on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Said it.
Yeah.
Yes, we said beat your face in the makeup rooms, and it was something you said, oh, bitch, your face is beat. I mean, it was just that whole thing. Like, if your face was beat, you look sickening. And so it was all these words. I was like, because at the same time, Calpurnia had just came out with Stunning. And yeah, I was stunning. I want to do a song that like incorporates our lingo. And that was the kind of, that's why Fierce Beat Face came together, was because it was like, it was about being sickening. Like you can walk down the street and just be like, oh, it's just like, and I loved about Fierce Beat Face is there's a line in there that says beauty made by design. And it basically was talking about being, I was born a man, but I created this image of who I am today. And that some cis women can look at me and be jealous because I was not born this way, but I was made this way. And so I always said, if I ever wanted to do a music video for it, I wanted to kind of do something like Frankenstein, where I was created on a lab table. And that was always my vision. It just never happened. But
well, that's the thing is, like, you know, unlike a lot of other trans entertainers and performers, you've always had this deep appreciation for the lingo, but also like a sense of humor in the journey that you're going through, you know, and
there's
a sense of joy in everything that you're doing. And that's, to me, what attracted us to you is I always found really exciting to hear about the term sickening. Like that's how I first heard about the term, was through you.
Yes. And then it's like, sickening is just, it's just that thing. And now you hear girls using other terms that I was performing, and this girl has a single out called Period. And she just kept on saying Period. And I kept on going, what? And just those old school queens were like, Period. And she's like, yeah, Period. And I was just like, okay.
What is that?
I'm too old. Just like, yeah, that's Period. It's just like the end of everything. Just Period. I'm assuming Period is like the end. It's like Period.
Well, part of it is like, you know, whenever we hear these kind of terms, I'm always like, how is that ever going to catch on? And then the next year, everyone's saying it. Like when Alaska said to me for the first time, hi, I was like, that is so annoying and off-putting.
That's how you know it's going to make it big, how annoying it's going to be to other people.
Yes. All the girls have a cat, like Gia Gunn has her catchphrase. They all have like their catchphrases that makes them. And I think that's what I wanted Sickening to be. I wanted Sickening to be a song that the girls were like, bitch, I'm going out and I'm looking sickening and I'm going to listen to a song and I'm going to feel it. And it was also, Sickening was a track that I did because I was tired of going out with my girlfriends, with Tracy, for example. We go out to a bar and we just want to have girls time and have fun, have a cocktail. And we'd be out sitting at the bar, just enjoying ourselves and dancing. And all of a sudden some guy comes up to us and wants to just hook up. And we're just like, bitch, we just want to party. Just leave us alone. Like,
we're not working today.
we're not the working girls here.
We're the customers. Thank you very much.
I can buy my own drinks. Thank you.
Yes. We're not in that corner over there.
All these years later, today in 2020, you have a new track called Kings and Queens, dedicated to addressing the challenges that transgender people go through and the 26 women that were killed for being transgender last year.
And the trans guy from this year at the beginning. So he's included in there.
Let's listen to a little bit of that. They just want to be seen, motherfucking kings and queens.
Yes.
Do you feel like your music writing or development has changed? And God, this is almost, we're looking at
11 years.
11 10, years now.
12 years.
Yeah, yeah, it has evolved. After Sickening, it came out at about the start of a different career that we'll talk about later in a little bit. But I kind of put my music on hold for that career. And in a way, I feel like I let go of a part of me that I really liked. But I also felt like I was going somewhere with my music, and who knows where I would be today if that music would have kept it would have kept going. But also I knew that I wasn't in a place to creatively continue what I wanted to say. I think I needed more life in me to say something. So this album, The Comeback, is really addressing a lot of topics, not just fun things. Like Fembot came out last year, and my producer wrote it, and he was like, I've always wanted someone to do this song, and he always tells people that I'm his muse. It's like he's Andy Warhol and I'm his muse. And so he's like, will you do this song? He's like, I need you to sing though. And I was like, well, I don't really sing. He's like, well, try. So I was like, okay. So I sang Fembot for the first time, and it was actually a really cute song. I mean, it's really it's a love song, basically. And it ends where they're not together. But it was so much fun to do because it just like got me into that. Okay, now I'm ready to write. Now I'm ready to say something. And so after Fembot, I started writing down everywhere I go. I'd start writing on my iPhone lyrics to songs. And I kept on. So talking about catchphrases, yeah. Kings and Queens was supposed to be called Yes Queens. It was supposed to be called Yes Queens, which is said throughout the song. And the reason why I wanted to call it Yes Queens is because my husband loves to say Yes Queen. He loves to say that all the time. And he's got my brother, who's country a redneck, to say Yes Queen. So my brother will say, if my brother sees something, he'll say Yes Queen. So I wanted to do a song that like kind of reference that whole thing for them, but I also wanted it to be a song for trans people to relate to. So after I sent him the first recording, he sent me back a demo, and it kept on going, we just want to be seen, we're motherfucking kings and queens. And I was like, from then on, I was like, the song needs to be called Kings and Queens. And in the way he threw Yes Queen in it throughout the whole thing is, it was just, I don't know, it was magical. I was writing because I wanted to address those trans people who are like in the closet or trying to find themselves, or those people that want to take their life because they feel alone. They feel like there's no one there. And then with the Trump administration really just going down hard on trans people, I just felt like, oh my God, I got to say something. And I want to say something in a way that cis people can listen to it and go, okay, they can relate to it, but also a trans person, a queer person, or a non-binary person can listen to it and realize that they're not alone, that there's someone out there, and that you just want to be seen. If it's not publicly being seen, you just want to be seen by somebody. You want to be acknowledged. You want to be loved. You want to be respected in whatever way it is. And so that's why I felt like I needed a song that was like a movement, in the sense that, you know, in one of those lines I say, we're just brothers and sisters uniting as the resistors. And it's like, it's time for us to resist our own government and stand up and fight just like they did in the 60s. I mean, and you know.
Well, when you have a broken heart, you make art. And yes. I always feel like LGBTQ people, non-binary, gender nonconformists, whether you're visiting in the land of gender nonconformity or you're a permanent resident, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're always sort of the middle children of society to some degree. Yep. And so we all have this passion, or a lot of us do, to want to be seen, to be entertainers, to be media personalities. And mm-hmm. when we first knew you and I talked to you, one thing you had said to us is that you dreamed of being a famous porn star.
Yeah.
And I just said, okay, Kennedy, whatever, sure.
That's your thing. You sure that's what you want to do?
Well, no, I just, you know, friends share their dreams and stuff like that. And part of it is like, not everybody gets to live out that dream. But you just relentlessly and brilliantly figured out how to be, and for a while you were one of the best known porn stars in the transgender scene.
Yeah.
How did that even come to be? This is one thing I don't know how this happened. How did you manage to do that?
Because you became a mover and a shaker in the industry.
I did. Okay, so this is really crazy because this is the first time that I'm actually talking as Kennedy about my porn career, because I felt in a lot of ways that I kind of just wanted, Kennedy was one thing and my porn career was another thing, and I was never going to intertwine them two together. And in some weird way, it did get intertwined together, because in porn, I was known as the voluptuous diva. So, because it's tattooed on my chest, so it was never going to go away.
Yeah,
anybody can recognize me from that tattoo. So I was like, if someone's hardcore into the trans world, they knew that Kennedy was that person that was in porn. But other people that don't know. And I always felt ashamed of it when I left porn, when I moved back to Texas and I was still doing porn. And I would fly out to LA and Vegas and work with people and come back. It was just like, oh my God, I feel like no one needs to know what I'm doing. And so I always had a story for where I was going or what I was doing.
Well, because some of your trans sisters and people in the LGBTQ community can get very jealous, and you are doing very well. And I'm sure that you were getting some shady bitches saying some nasty shit, trying to stop you from succeeding in your dreams.
Yeah, no. So So when I moved back to Texas from Chicago, I was in a really depressed place in my life when I left Chicago, and that has a lot to do with, we probably address this, is the reason that we all fell out too, is it also had a lot to do with where I was in my life as my depression. And I never realized I was depressed until years later. You look back on it and you see that, like, I never really knew what depression was or what it was about. So when I moved back to Texas, I was like, oh, we're going to try to start a career. So me and Sean tried to start a business. It really didn't work.
What was the business?
So it was selling, or it was breeding and selling multi-poos, dogs.
Dogs. Dog breeding business.
Yeah. Because I had a friend who did Chihuahuas, and so we did that, and it just was really hard on us because it was a lot of work and a lot of money. And I was like, no, can't do that. And then I moved to Austin to do drag again, because I had been on hiatus from doing drag. So I was like, well, Austin's a good scene for doing drag. And I had my drag daughter was in Austin. And I knew a lot of the girls, and I became friends with a lot of girls by just going up and visiting her. That they were like, come up and you can work on the shows. And so I came up and I started doing some of the shows and stuff like that. But also at the same time, I don't know how porn came into my existence, but it did come into my existence. So when I was 20, this company called Shemale Yum, which is now called Groovy Girls, they contacted me at 20 and asked me to be, because I had just happened to be on the cover of Ladylike magazine, and they asked me to, would you ever want to do porn? And I said, oh no, I'm going to be one of those trans girls that, stealth. And no one's ever going to know.
Well, were you worried that by sort of being in adult films that you were opening up yourself to a lot more scrutiny than you were ready for?
Yes. Well, and so I tell girls now today, when girls ask me advice about getting into the industry, I say, please do not get in the industry if you don't know who you are. I went into the industry in my 30s. It was a whole different ballgame. That I'm so glad I never went into the industry in my 20s, where I didn't know who I was. So I shot for Shemale Yum in 2010. It released in February 2011. On their site. It's coincided in February 2011 that I hosted the Transgendered Erotica Awards.
You were opening for it, and you were like a big name with the Transgender Erotica Awards as well.
So
that's kind of like the Oscars for transgender adult films.
Yeah. So back then it was called the Tranny Awards. And now it's been labeled the Transgender Erotica Awards. And so my girlfriend, Morgan Bailey, who I knew from Chicago, she was in, we did drag out in Juliet together. So she got into the porn industry like a year before me, and she blew up. And so I contacted her and said, I would like to do it. I would like to come out to LA and be around y'all guys and try to pursue it as a career. And she's like, yeah, come on out, come on out. And then I think in December she called me. So we had already planned that we were going to move at the end of January out to LA. We were going to get a U-Haul and move out to LA. And she goes, also, I got a gig for you. She's like, I know you're good at hosting. I know you're good on the mic. She's like, they need a host for the Tranny Awards. Would you want to host it? And I said, sure. I would love to. And so basically the day before the awards, we get to LA in a U-Haul. We check into this Homestead Suites type thing. It was like a suites hotel. So it was like a bigger hotel, looked like it had a kitchen with it or whatever. And so we lived in one of those for the majority of my time there, because I never could find an apartment and stuff like that. And I hosted the Transgender Erotica Awards, not knowing any porn star in that room except for my friend Mark. I knew no one. I'm walking the red carpet. They're asking me questions. I decided I'm going to wear some drag hair. I had some big ass Texas drag queen hair. I was standing there in like a sequins dress, and I was just like, and I came out and performed, I think, Sickening before it started. And I was just like doing all this stuff. And then I started playing with the trans girls that were in the front row. So we were in a small club. We were like in a big club, actually, to be honest. I mean, not a big club, but it was a small club. It wasn't even the Transgender Erotica Awards wasn't even big at that time. I'm hosting this, and there's trans girls in the front, and there's one that's a dominatrix. So she plays with her masculine and femininity, and her name's Dani Daniels, and she's really tall and she's gorgeous. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like really attracted to this person. But she's a trans girl, and I'm like, I don't like femininity, but I liked her masculine butchness. But I was just like, there was something about her that, and she's sitting there in the front row, and she has a submissive girl, this woman, on all fours, and her legs are propped on this girl. This girl didn't move the whole time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's her leg rest. And I was just like, so I sat down beside her while I'm hosting, and I start like making fun of it. And I start like talking to her, and I'm like cracking jokes about this, and she's laughing with me. And she's like, maybe another host probably wouldn't even went there. And I went there, and after that, it's when all these girls that have been in the industry a while basically just were like, this girl's got it. She may not be a porn star, but she's got it. And they all befriended me. So it was this whole subculture of things. Well, at that time, trans girl porn was changing in a lot of ways.
Really? How was it changing?
Well, it was becoming more that girls were getting more of their own solo sites. It was also a time when we were doing things that like they don't even do now. Like these new girls coming in wouldn't know anything about it. Like literally you had trans parties every day of the week in LA. You go to a bar and you just be let in because you're one of the girls. You would just come in and you would just sit there and people buy you drinks. And then this guy, Dan, he would record us all. We would be shit-faced drunk in the bar, and he would put a camera in our face and start asking us questions. Like, he just knew how to get us. Like, we were being documented and thrown on the internet of just watching your favorite porn stars in the club, just having fun. But you're like, oh, I want to be there. So there would be guys that would come to LA just because they see our videos out in the clubs and they'd want to be around us.
So imagine you must have had some really wonderful sexual experiences as a result of that.
I did, because yeah. I got to also play with my sexuality. I got to work with cis women. It was the first time I ever been with a cis woman before. I was the first time I ever went down on a cis woman. I learned how to eat vagina on film.
What was that learning process like?
It was interesting. It was different, and but it opened doors for things like working with trans men. And I remember when I first met a trans guy. It was in Chicago. I was out in the suburbs at Hunter's, and this
that's a gay fine, bar that, fine, that was yeah. out in the burbs. Now it's gone, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Sadly,
I think it is. I think that before it left, it was renamed something else. But
Phoenix, because it was going to rise from the ashes. But I think those ashes got all burnt up too.
But that was the meeting place back in the day for the trans girls, and that's how I met Tracy. That's how I met Tracy was at Hunter's. And so,
out in the burbs. What is it about the burbs that there's like more of like a trans bar going out kind of thing happening? I mean, it happens in the city, I would imagine too, but it really seemed like there was the hotbed of a lot of trans activity was out in the burbs.
I think because I felt more safe. I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea.
Explained it to us. She said that for a lot of trans women in an urban environment, their gender is much more questioned. Because people have a frame of reference, but in the suburbs, because there's not a visible LGBTQ community, a lot of people take your gender as you present it, you know, so they're not necessarily questioning you as much.
No, totally. And I know Tracy before she even transitioned, and I would always tell Tracy, girl, you're a trans. It's you just need to get ready. And I would always tell her that.
Long? I didn't realize you knew her that
long.
Yeah.
So I've known Tracy before she transitioned. So it was like, it was a bunch of things. So I always told Tracy, you got this.
You would describe Tracy as one of your sisters, like one of the people you've been closest to in your life.
We reach out to you. We don't talk as much as we used to, but we do reach out and talk to each other. And, we're proud of each other and our accomplishments and like that. She was one of the first people that really just was like happy for me when I was in my adult business because, you know, like back to the adult world I was the first trans girl to actually incorporate trans men into porn. Buck Angel had done it, but he had stopped doing it because the gay scene is what made Buck Angel money. So he realized trans women was not going to make him money. So he stopped working with trans women. So for me, I had met a trans guy named James Starling, and he was really big in the queer porn world. And I was just in love with him. And I was like, would you want to do a scene with me? And he's like, sure. And so it was accumulated that thing. And after we did that scene, I said, I want to do a whole movie about me having adventures with trans men. And I said, would you shoot it? And he said, yeah. So we shot the movie in New York City. We shot it in LA with me with these different trans guys that had never been seen on film before. And
is he going by the name James Darling XXX on Twitter?
I'm guessing.
Yes.
That sounds like a porn name.
He's a cutie pie for sure.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
And so James Darling got me into it. And then I started. And then so I would recruit guys. And so, I mean, I made these guys kind of famous in the world of porn because I brought them into people's lives. So like Dickie Johnson and Dickie Johnson and Parker Reed and Eddie Wood and let's see, my husband, Tyler St. Sin. I mean, I was also the reason that trans men got nominated again for an AVN award, which had never been done since Buck Angel won it. So Dickie and Tyler both got nominated back to back years with all the other girls. And that was the first time it had been done in like 10 years. So, I mean, I did do a lot of good things. I also, in the porn world also, when I first started doing porn and I would ask studios to let me, can I work with you? Can I do a scene for your company? And they would tell me, no, you're too fat. And I would be like, what? I was like, because if you put me next to a real BBW girl, I look like I'm a size zero. But if you put me by a size zero girl, I look like I'm a BBW in the porn world. And that's how they view things. So I was too fat. And one time they didn't tell me I was too fat. They just told me I had too many visible tattoos. And then I was like, well, you're working with my good friend, Morgan Bailey, who is covered in tattoos. So you can't use that excuse. So they're like, yeah, it just won't work for transsexual cheerleaders 27. You just don't fit the mold. Or babysitters 15.
Kids, go to bed. Your parents are coming home soon.
So I was like, okay, well then, you know what? I'm just going to start creating my own work. And so I started creating my own films. I started producing my own films and all my stuff started getting nominated for awards. And
remarkable the moments in time that you've been a pioneer. Just to reiterate here.
Yeah.
Before Lizzo, it was Kennedy Monroe being the voluptuous diva. So body positivity. Before there was OnlyFans, and half of these, you know, Rue girls and Dragula girls, they're like, one of their side hustles is doing explicit films on OnlyFans or Patreon or whatever.
Yeah.
So you were an adult film do-it-yourselfer. You were a drag queen before the drag explosion on RuPaul's Drag Race, making your singles and songs, just like the Rue girls are doing today. You were a pioneer in terms of journalism as with T-Talk 101 with Raina Valentino, and you were part of the trans before the trans explosion Laverne Cox and so many visible, well-known transgender people are being celebrated in online media. It begs to ask the question, do you feel like you were born too soon to some degree?
Yeah, you know what? Or I did it too soon. Like, it was like someone wasn't watching. Like, it was just like, I look at it like, you know, I think about that. I think about like Laverne Cox, or I think about, you know, like my whole career in drag started because I was a theater major. I was like obsessed with theater and I wanted to be an actor. And I remember in college, they just basically told me, well, you're basically too gay and too feminine to be anything. So I never got to pursue that. So drag in a lot of ways was my outlet to being an actor and performing, because I could be anybody and emulate anybody I wanted.
To be seen and heard, motherfucking kings and queens. Kings and
queens, there we go. So yeah, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be all that. Now, my grandma will tell you to this day, she's like, when are you going to be famous? You used to always tell me when you're little, you're going to be famous. And I said, and you're going to buy me a house and you're going to take care of me. Well, I'm taking care of them, but I'm not famous. I'm not making the money. A lot of people think that because I had a porn career and that I had my own company in the porn industry, I got screwed over. I lost thousands of dollars from a company that was distributing my movies. They just basically closed down. And I never really made money off of porn. I was actually homeless in LA while doing porn.
That's so heartbreaking. Because, you know, anytime we've ever had a guest on the show that did something, you know, we've had falling outs with people, or the guests went on to become super famous and, you know, too busy to hang out with us. But inevitably, you know, our audience sends us links to the stuff that you guys have been doing, because I think they form a deep relationship with you. Yes. We form a deep relationship with you, and it's heartbreaking when, for whatever reason, our paths no longer cross. And one thing that I loved getting in emails was your porn videos. And let me explain why. Because just like your music had this really joyful, affirmative body positivity on it, so did your pornography. And one of my favorite things that Mark and I used to enjoy watching was your tribute to Marilyn Monroe and going to the candy shop. And so the video starts with you dressed up as Marilyn Monroe, and you're walking down the street, and this scary, spooky music comes in, very film noir, and a tribute to the 7-year itch. The updraft lifts the skirt up, and we see there's more than meets the eye. Yes. And then all of a sudden, the Marilyn Monroe character that you're playing there says, "Let's go to the candy shop." And then all of a sudden, you do a sex scene in a 1950s diner with milkshakes and French fries and burgers around. And I just thought that was so wonderful.
It was. Now, what's funny about that is that's one of the companies that told me, no, you can't shoot for us. And the only reason I got shot for them is because I could look like Marilyn Monroe in such a way. And that site was called T-Girl Pinups. So they told me the stipulation for me to do that was that I had to get paid. So I got paid less than most of the girls on that site. And I also had to cover my tattoos. So,
that's no fun.
Yeah, so I had so everything was covered in there by makeup, and
were you kind of being rebellious a little bit in during the thing because you felt like that you were having sort of compromise yourself in order to make this video, or were you just kind of doing what they were asking you to do?
They were the director basically told me everything to say. Like it became to a point where I felt like I wasn't being mean. It really was.
Because we know you, and we're like sensing, like, you know, if someone said to you, "Hey, Kennedy, say, let's go to the candy shop," you'd be like, real sarcastically, "Let's go to the candy shop."
Yes.
And then we see your candy.
Yeah. It was like this whole thing that was cheesy and stupid to me. And I just felt like, oh my God, why am I doing this? But I was there and I was doing it. But after that, that really made me realize that I didn't want to work for a company, that I didn't want a company telling me what I can and can't do. And that's how my mentality has always been about a lot of things in my life was no one's going to tell me what to do. I've always been a rebellion. My family will tell you that. I've always been the type of person that if you tell me not to do something, I'll go do it. And I'll tell you to fuck off and I'll just go do whatever the fuck I want to do. And so
then you had another video that you had these giant pink balloons and you were sitting down on them and popping them.
Oh, one of my favorite fetishes.
I have to say, I just absolutely love that so much that we started imitating you. And we were putting it on YouTube, and our dog, Jesse, was like barking like because he was scared of the balloons, you know?
Yeah.
And YouTube took it down.
Because it was a fetish video.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, hold on a second. All I'm doing is sitting on a balloon going, this balloon's so big. Yeah,
because someone's probably sitting there jacking off to it, too.
But it's a balloon. It's not nothing, you know.
I know.
But it was great. The way that, and this is the thing that I really thought was really clever about you, is that you would find these kind of ideas that were kind of in the margins there, and you would lift them up and celebrate them. And that's what you did with your drag, what you did with your music, what you did with the adult films.
Yeah, I always wanted to do things. So when I was doing porn, I was like, well, they're not going to let me do mainstream porn. So I was like, okay, well. So I started talking to people in the fetish world, and I was like, what are things that people like to do? And that's how I came across balloons. Someone told me, balloons, they're big. Like, do a video with balloons.
They're
and I was like,
pop.
Yeah.
Were there any other kind of things that you wanted to do or did that we might have been aware of or that are like had this kind of quality?
So being, because I was a BBW, I was considered a BBW.
Big, beautiful woman.
So there was a lot of... things with food that I did. I ate food while I was jacking off.
So it was like a mukbang video where you're like, what were you eating?
A cake.
Oh, I love you so much.
There was a
that
video.
Really speaks
there was a
to vi- me.
There was a video where I put I poured creamer all over my body and jacked off. There was a video that. I did my own American pie version, apple pie.
Oh, you
get out of the
pie.
Oven. Yeah. so those kind of things I did. And so,
were you getting like feedback from the producer saying, "Hey, Kennedy, you gotta pull it back. No, be so silly, or don't be so outrageous."
Well, no, because it was never a producer, because it was my content. It was me. And that's what's crazy is that 90% of the content of me online to this day, I personally own. So, no company owns my content except for, you know, the select sites that I work for. So basically, my image online in the adult world is created by me and it's owned by me. So at any time that I ever want to take it down, except for the pirated stuff, is mine. So that was the thing a lot of people didn't understand too. People want porn for free and people want to watch things for free. People always assumed that I made thousands and thousands of dollars off of my porn. And none of us girls do. And
no,
so when
you're like part of a major media machine, every online, you know, whether it's a podcast or a film star or whatever, they're hustling, you know?
Yeah, you're hustling. And the people that are making the millions of dollars are the companies that are putting your work out there. It's not you. And that's what you had to deal with, is that, you know, it's always a cis white man running this big company and he's making the millions while you're just making the couple of thousands of dollars that you got to shoot that scene. But
I know the day that you were a bona fide porn star, not just a porn actor, was when somebody went on a tour bus with Peaches Christ and Heclina.
The Mothership to Reno.
And they did you ever hear about this? They decorated the inside of the tour bus with pinup photos of trans porn stars. And one of the most popular images that everybody was like taking pictures of it was you.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
And so people were like, is this the same Kennedy Monroe from your podcast? And I'm like, yes, her dreams have really come true.
Yeah.
And part of it is like, you know, sometimes like I think Peaches has always loved you and celebrated you. But then
I love Peaches.
And she loves you. Yeah, she loves you back. But some people are always like, you know, did you see what Kennedy Monroe's doing? And I'm like, and I'm always like, listen, you know, and you and I, we had a falling out. And maybe this is a good time to talk about this. You have a I think the way the series of events happened was we would have you on the podcast as a regular basis. And one time you posted on our forums asking what you wanted to talk. What did the audience want to talk about? And I said to a lot of the guests at the time that were regular guests, this is a potluck. Bring ideas. Don't like, you know, do amazing things and come and talk about it. Like, cause otherwise we were sort of like developing content for the guests to comment on. And that upset you. And, from then on we had a parting of ways. At the same time, we were also working as referees, trying to capture the cultural crisis that LGBT people went through, that at least that was our attempt. And in that attempt to do so, we got into the role of a referee between really was trans drag entertainers and cisgender gay men entertainers. And so you posted a video saying protest the Feast of Fools.
Feast of Fools must be stopped. They are tearing this community apart, if I might quote it accurately.
Can you talk about the feelings in your heart? And just for the record, I want to say I adore you and I celebrate you. And it was very heartbreaking to see that video, not just because of the fact that, you know, it was definitely an attempt to try to stop this podcast, but also because I really wanted to be friends with you. And I felt that that was not possible at the time.
Well, and I also feel like, too, there was some influence from outside of like our community, like right here, what we do here in the show, from like people in the nightlife world. I think we're putting a lot of pressure on you because you were still involved with us.
Yes. What's great about Feast of Fun and Feast of Fools back then was that I also got to meet amazing people and become friends with a lot of amazing people. And also, at that time in my life, as I referenced earlier, I was in a weird place and I was in a depression. And I never really saw it that way. And so maybe something triggered my anger at the time that I decided to post a video that I don't even remember now. But it, I mean, it's coming back because you are saying things from it. But I just, there's so many things. Like, I can go on my YouTube channel and look at videos of me and go, oh, I did that, or I talked about that, or I was like, wow, I did that before all these other bitches were doing. I was doing makeup tutorial videos before it became a thing. And I was like, and they're making millions of dollars off of advertisements and I'm not. So, but yes, I was in a weird place in my life. Because I think at that point in my life, I thought, oh, I'd be making more money as it, because at that time I was in cosmetology. I was working in a salon, and the salon was closing down, and I had to go to a new salon, and it was dealing with a lot of things that just were not, I wasn't ready for. And on top of it, you know, I was in a relationship with someone fairly new, and it's just like, I think a lot of things, I felt like maybe at that time, maybe I just wanted to be a trans girl more so, or just a girl that just wasn't influenced by also the gay scene. And that's maybe where I was. I felt like in some ways my life has always coincided around a gay scene, so maybe it was a way of me to going, okay, here's how I've always fucked up things and relationships, was is if someone or something triggered me, I would do everything to sabotage it so it would never be put back together again. That relationship would never be kindled again. And I'm really good at sabotaging things. So I felt like that was what I was doing. I was sabotaging it to a point that I could never go back on the show, and that I would never miss the show, because in my mind I would hate the show and I would hate the people. So then that's how I looked at it. So that's how it went about.
You know, hearing you say those words, I hope that other people who have hard feelings about working with us in the past can hear that. And not because I would like for them to come back and be guests with us, but because I want them, their hearts to heal as well.
To be peaceful.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, agree. And I remember when we reached out to each other, and I remember Tracy would always tell me, girl, they ask about you. You need to talk to them. Just say something, girl. She's like, come on. And I would be like, nah. But she always tried, and she always tried. And eventually it just came to a point. I remember, I think she said something to me one day on the phone. And just out of the blue, I think we contacted each other and just started talking about things. Or you added me on Facebook, or I can't remember how it all played out, but it became a point where I was like, okay, I'm gonna let this happen. I'm gonna let this evolve, because I'm a lot older now. A lot of things changed. And something about Feast of Fun and is that it's a queer place in our internet fear. I mean, in our world that was doing things before everybody else was doing things, kind of like in my sense, doing things before everybody was doing things. And it's like, we all still run to those things that make us feel good. And so I started finding myself listening to the show again, listening to new things, or going back and trying to listen to old things. And I love podcasts. I love podcasting. I even did my own adult podcast when I was in the porn world, and I interviewed all the big names. And that's how podcasting has always been a part of my life. I would love to podcast again and do something like Tea Talk again. But it's time consuming. It's finding a time that it works for me and it's relatable to people. And that's another thing, is finding something that reaches an audience. That what I was doing back then, it was weird. It just like reached an audience really fast and really good. And then now it's like, I put out a song and it's like, oh, like Kings and Queens is one song I just wish would just basically go off, and then everybody's talking about it. And
can I just share with you, it's like, it would be so wonderful if millions of people would love the creative work that we make, the way Lady Gaga or Taylor Swift dressed up as an old guy. You know, the way yeah, their work is celebrated, it would be wonderful if that happens. But don't discount that the 300 people who are diehard fans of what you do, don't forget that that means the world to them.
Oh, I agree. And, no, I totally agree. Yeah,
you've been doing this stuff for over a decade now, and I know that there's a lot of people out there who savor your music the way they savor a favorite piece of candy. They don't want to chew it. They want to slowly suck on it to get every morsel out of it, because when it's gone, it's going to be gone forever.
Yeah, I get that. I do love my 300 and some fans or followers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't bother me. The reason why I say I want Kings and Queens to be just like another element is because I just want it to be a message that people hear. So Kings and Queens also has a censored version called, instead of saying motherfucking Kings and Queens, we say we're all beautiful Kings and Queens.
Aww.
And I wanted to do something for trans kids or young queer people that they can listen to it and their mom's not going to be mad that they're listening to someone that says we're motherfucking Kings and Queens. And so I work at my work. I have a day job, well, a night job or whatever. And I let my coworker hear my song after it came out, and right before it came out. And I said, well, that's that version. Here's the clean version. And she started listening to the clean version. She's like, it's nice and all, but she says, motherfucking Kings and Queens says it a little bit powerful.
You have to declare it. To name it is to claim it.
Yeah.
Now let's go back and talk about that video a little bit more, though.
Which video?
the Feast of Fools Must Be Stopped. Because
I don't remember what it is.
Well, let's play a clip. Is they have issues. If you know anything about it, their show is full of drama. They are all about ratings, and they love to fuck their fans. And just to let you know, if you're a fan of Feast of Fools and you have that fantasy to be a Mark and Fausto, they are not those skinny people that you think they are. They are both actually fat, and they're airbrushed, or they're old pictures of themselves, just to let you know. And they love to use their fans for their pleasure. And just let you know, they don't care about you, and they won't care about you after they have fucked you. So just to let you know, watch out. It's not a good thing. I am coming out and saying this because I am angry. I just think it's time that we as people, gay, lesbian, bi, straight, transgendered, stand up for who we are as people, and to not let shows like Feast of Fools air.
But it's like, as much as like it kind of like it hurt us when it happened, also too, it was like our friends were like, well, you know you've made it when somebody like that does a They Must Be Stopped video. But between like the look on your face and your Texas twang, because you were raised in Texas, you were born someplace else
in Ohio.
Ohio, but you were raised in Texas and you have that East Texas twang. It was so inspiring to Fausto, who although he's Puerto Rican, lived in Texas for a while. His mother's from Texas folks and stuff, that it inspired pretty much Saltina, his drag character.
Daphne Dumont must be stopped. She is tearing. I am so mad. My name is Saltina Bouvier, and I'm putting together this video because I'm really upset at one of my sisters who is in our community. She is doing all the wrong things and tearing this community apart.
Daphne Dumont must be stopped. She is tearing this community apart, and I'm not having anything of it. So here's my good gal pal, Candy Dick. Mm-hmm. That was Tracy Tyler's other drag name.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an intervention with Daphne Dumont, who was humiliating and insulting us entertainers in the drag scene. And part of it is, you know, Kennedy, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. And we enjoyed the lemonade so much that it grew into Cooking with Drag Queens. The first video that we made of Cooking with Drag Queens was me as Saltina with Larry LaFontaine as Lola Von Miramar and Mark as Daphne Dumont. Mm-hmm. And that evolved from videos that we did with Victoria Lamar and Tracy Tyler. Mm-hmm. And so then the
but also too, those videos also evolved from like the fetish video that we did of forced feminization. Yes. Because I really wanted to, because have you ever done a crushing? Well, when you pop the balloons, that's kind of like a crushing fetish video. Uh-huh. But like mine was referencing, because at the time there's legal cases about these crushing women stepping on like small animals and stilettos. Happening at that time, but like people would crush other things like Wonder Bread between their boobs, or they sit on cakes and that kind of stuff. And so the tostones you have to crush. So it was part fetish video, which may have been inspired by you as well at the time. I don't know.
You've inspired so many good things in our lives.
Yeah, you have to keep creating.
And part of it is like, you know, for us, to me, and I explain this to people, art is always a conversation between individuals and communities. And it's like, you never know when you put something out there, how it's going to influence somebody. So put things that really you're passionate about, that lift your spirits, that excite you and invigorate you, because, you know, God, who's to say that RuPaul's Drag Race would even exist had we not been around in that very critical first season for that? And it's like, so many of the contestants from RuPaul's Drag Race came from Cooking with Drag Queens in the podcast. And, thanks to somebody like you as a pioneer to lay that foundation. And we never thank enough the people, the quiet heroes and sheroes who laid the groundwork for the world to be a better place, you know? And you know you've done something well sometimes is because no one knows you did anything at all.
That's true. That is true. It's just like, it's so true. It's just like, I wish things did, you know, you always say, oh, I wish something happened or whatever. But like, for example, you know, me protesting Feast of Fun was a part of my life that in lots of ways was sabotaging something that was really good. But also, for you guys, it created something magical in the end. And of course, I moved on and did many things too. So it's like, and here we are full circle again now, just talking and reminiscing. And it's great, because that's what I loved about being on the show was, it was like, we could sit and goof about and talk about things. We could talk about pop culture. I remember I'd come into to your old studio, and we'd be sitting there, and you would just throw me like papers that you printed off the internet and said, what do you think about talking about that today?
Yeah, we used to, but now we work on digitally. We have computers or iPads and stuff. But I remember I used to print out like web pages and highlight stuff. It was crazy.
Yeah, just like, what do you think about talking about this topic? And I was
of which, Lady Gaga came out with a new music video, and everyone's very excited about it, where she plays a pink alien.
It was all shot on an iPhone 11.
iPhone 11 Pro.
Ooh.
Ooh,
you know, a lot of my porn was shot on iPhone.
Wow. Yeah. Too bad we don't have the cameras on these new phones today is so good. It really kind of makes me sad we didn't have it like a decade ago, you know? And I'm what took you so long, tech companies?
Yeah, my last two films in the adult industry that both got nominated for awards was... they were all shot on iPhones when the 4K ones came out. So it was like, it was basically a family. Transcest was what it was called. Transcest, which was basically we were all playing family members. Yeah, and the first one, I was a mom to these kids. But yeah, so
brothers, now sisters.
Oh, we used that phrase too. Yeah,
what was that from? That was from
Sister Dick. That was going to be something. It never coincided into anything.
Once brothers, but now sisters.
Yes.
Sisters.
We love that one.
So good.
So that's how it was so funny. But Sister Dick was supposed to come. something, and it never came of something. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. Sister Dick was actually the name of my podcast I had, and it was called Sister Dick Radio.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Once brothers, now sisters.
People say, what is it? Sister Dick will make you sick, the expression. Yes, people don't say that as much anymore, though, because now they're just do whatever.
Well, that's transphobic to say that, too. And mm-hmm. and now it's like there's such an appetite for a lot of these, you know, drag queen reality TV stars, from Dragula, Drag Race,
Pose, all that stuff.
There's forums and Just for Fans and all that shit where they're showing their dicks. And like that queen from, I think it was a couple seasons ago, the one with the tattoos who has a lot of muscles. Cameron Michaels.
Oh, Cameron Michaels.
She is always on the internet posting photos of her dick and asshole and stuff like that for money. You know?
Yeah, and is so is the one from Dragula season 2 that was the runner
hairy up. The really hairy one?
No, the one that was that looked like a club kid. What's his name? He was runner up in season 2 of Dragula.
The season 3, I saw her at a club and I kind of wanted to talk about it with her, you know, just like, I think it's really great. And then there's a lot of sex positivity that people are taking, you know, adult films and monetizing it on their own and not letting a third party, you know, exploit them except taking, you know, 5% of what they sell.
Well, then you look at somebody like Jack McEnroth, who was on season 4 of Project Runway and had a career in fashion and then became an AIDS advocate. And like, it's like, you can see his butthole all over the place now for a certain price.
Wow. It's just like, so that's why I decided. Well, it's not that I decided. Well, because for example, my music, my album, like I said, it's called The Comeback, and there's going to be a song that I've written for it that's basically me outing myself that I was in porn. And just because I was in porn doesn't mean it gives you the right to just assume that you can touch me, or it's all about consent in such a ways when you meet fans, or so those are the kind of things. But also the album also has a song that is called Travis, and it's basically a love song, a love breakup song to who I was. Travis was my birth name, so it's kind of like it's a love song talking to Travis about thanking them for being a part of my life, being there in my most weakest moments. So those are the kind of things that a lot of trans people don't want to talk about. People don't want to acknowledge your birth name. They call it the dead name. Stuff like that. So it's just like there's these things that I just want to play with that is so against the norm, but also to a dance beat on the other
line. Well, that's what I remember, so like, back in the day with you and Tracy, a lot of transgender people saw you guys as very much as rebels. And we had a skit one time we did with the Chicago Transgender Society. Tracy Tyler must be stopped.
She's tearing this community apart.
We play that a lot. And there actually was a collective called the Be All Convention.
Yes.
It was kind of like a forerunner to RuPaul's Drag Con, where it was mostly
It was basically a trans convention, but majority of the people that were at the convention were cis men who like to cross dress. That's really what it was. It was a way that these men could come and spend a weekend at this convention in this hotel and just dress up and be away from their like corporate lawyers and stuff like that. Like, you would never know that they'd like to cross dress. And, it was that type of thing. I mean, there was trans women there, and I would go there all the time. I actually had a seminar that I would teach, and that's also how I met Morgan Bailey, was because of Be All. But it just was. That's how I even got interested really into porn, because it was those cross dressers, the ones that really liked the trans porn, and they're the ones that really were like, "Oh, it was." It's because to them it's a fetish, whereas us trans women, it's not a fetish. Like, we don't Like, to this day, if a guy goes, do you have a pair of hose? I'm like, bitch, I don't own no hose. I don't need hose. I don't want to wear hose.
I am the hoe.
But, yeah, so it's like those kind of things. But, yeah, B-All was a trans convention.
What happened to B-All, though?
I think that they just didn't have the money to do it no more. And, it's something missed. It's like a lot of things that just slowly are disappearing because of the technology of the time. It's because so many people have Facebook. Facebook lets people see that, like, for example, I've never had a class reunion because people don't feel like they need a class reunion because they're all friends on Facebook. They know what they're doing. So it's not like it's a surprise when you meet them in person. It's just like,
the world we live in today is a result of the hard work and sacrifice that people like you did in the past.
Yeah.
And I feel this sometimes, and I wonder if you feel this as well, is that with all this visibility and mainstream acceptance, there still is violence towards, LGBTQ people. And in some ways, instead of sort of being able to capitalize on being unique and different and special, now as content creators, we're having to fight with VH1 and, the New York Times and all these giant wealthy corporations who are trying to do their own Tea Talk 101.
Yeah, it is true. It's just like, that's what it's like. So hard in a way, it's kind of like, for example, like the other day, just going through, once YouTube converted my YouTube channel to a musician channel, artist channel, I just started going and looking at videos I did, and I was like, wow, I was doing things before any of these so-called influencers were doing. Like, if you look at the views of some of my videos, there's so many views, and I never made a dime off of it because it was before... it was really way before they were monetizing things that you could make money like these people do today. So it's like, it's crazy. It's just like, it's, I was like, wow, I was doing things.
Doing a lot of things, girl. A lot of things.
I had my hand in everything.
I feel like we just scratched the surface, Kennedy. And it's so good to hear your voice, and it's so good to kiki with you.
I know.
That's a term we got from you. Spilling the tea. That's another term we got from you. These are all terms that, like, people ask us, like, why were you so ahead of the curve? And it really was thanks to Victoria Lamar and Tracy and to you and to Reina Valentino and other people who I don't want to out because they're out as trans. But, people who contributed a lot to the early days of this podcast were people who really influenced and shaped the public's appetite for gender non-conforming artists.
Yeah, and that was something I had to learn too throughout this whole process of me growing up as a trans person. So, for example, gender non-conforming became something really big while I was in the porn industry, and it became something really, at first I was like, oh no, you're either a boy or you're a girl.
You guys used to say, like, she's not really trans because she's only, passing as a woman some of the time.
Mm.
And there was a lot of, like, discussion on, like, authenticity.
Right.
You're a tourist and not a resident.
There's a lot of questions.
There's a term I always tell my husband now sometimes when we're out and we see someone that's, like, they look very feminine, or I would always say, that's a lady in waiting, and my husband just died. But now it's
everybody was kind of trying to wrap their head around the idea of non-binariness.
Maybe that's a non-binary person, and so it's crazy that I'm living back in where I grew up in, and I'm going to this town that's like grown so much since I was a teenager, trying to find myself and discover myself, and being out as a young gay person in a small town where everybody knew everybody's business. Now it's like this big suburb of Houston, and so you go, like, we go to the movie theater, and there's boys there that have makeup on and have their nail polished, and we're like, yes, queen, and it's like, yes, and they're like, we incur, like, me and my husband, anytime we see that, we will stop and say, get it, girl, or anything, just like say, oh, I love your nails. We let them know that we know and that we're a part of you. We're a part of your world. And we also know that it's hard to be doing this in this kind of environment that we're living in a, it's still redneck country, but you know, are
when
being
I run
yourself.
Into somebody like that at the grocery store, I go up to them and I'm like, this is, you look amazing. Thank you for doing this. And the reaction is like, mind your own fucking business, old man.
Kennedy, I saw on Facebook, did you build a house?
I'm still building a motherfucking house. I'm just like over it. So when we started this house that we're building on my grandparents' property so we could be, we're living in an RV while we're building it. And my grandpa was helping us and he had heart surgery and all stuff and it got put on pause. So it's now trying to do it again. But originally it was going to be like a tiny house. And then it turned out we were going to do, it was going to be like a barn turned into a house. It was like this little two-story barn that was going to be turned into a house. And then it turned in, my grandpa goes, well, we can add more square footage to it. So we became this big two-story house. It's not big in the sense of big, but it's already to a point where probably we're going to outgrow it by the time we move into it. But it's like, it's a work in progress. It's like,
what
so
made you decide to do,
I have spare,
I mean, that's amazing. A big undertaking to build a house.
It is. And it's a horrible undertaking. My husband's just like, oh my God. Well, we thought it was going to be easy because my grandpa and my brother's a contractor. We thought he was going to help. And it just became, my brother's job just became really busy and he couldn't help us. And so it's kind of like now it's just like sitting there. It basically stores all my drag right now. It's like the,
got yourself a drag studio. Out of it.
Yes, I do. And
I imagine that when you guys are finally finished, it's going to be a really cute place to live.
It will. It will be. And I told my husband the other day, I was like, it may not be perfect and it may not be what we originally wanted, but it's something that we can work towards and make better. And that's how I look at it. It's like how I live my life now is totally different than I did before. It was like, now it's like my husband sometimes, which my husband's a trans male guy. And he sometimes stresses out about things. He also has Asperger's. So he'll stress out about, you know, like finances and stuff like that. And I'll tell him, you know what? So like sometimes we just want to go out to eat. He's like, well, we don't have the money. I said, well, we have the money and we may be broke later this week, but let's go eat and have fun and live life, because too many people around me have, you know, left this earth way too early or too young. And so you never know when it's your time. And we're so consumed about, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. And some of us being starving artists, I mean, me being a starving artist for so long that it came to a point where I had to go get a real job just so I can get health benefits for me and my husband and different things that eventually if I retire or quit or whatever, I at least have some kind of money sitting in a 401k.
Preach, sister. That's, I'd say my path has been very similar. You're working for a large, let's not say the name of the company just in case it gets you into trouble, but you're working for a large, a very successful retail giant. And part of your job is mentoring other people.
Yeah. I mean, I train people. It's one of the few, companies in the United States that support LGBTQ people. Their healthcare supports trans surgeries. Like my husband got his top surgery because of my insurance through my company. So, I mean, you can be a leader and be trans. I remember when I started working there, I didn't out myself at all for the, it was almost a year before I outed myself at work. And I remember a girl one day I was teaching cause I would train new associates to come in, how to drive pit these machines that we have to work on. And I would train them how to drive. And I remember the one girl goes, you know who you sound like? And I was like, who? She says, you sound like the girl off the 70s show.
I was thinking for a second, you're like, you remind me of Kennedy Monroe. You're like, that's me.
So I was like, yeah, I was like, I get that a lot. And so I remember after I kind of started slowly coming out, and they have a group at work that's for LGBTQ people. I remember we all went to this meeting. It was like five of us. And we're looking at each other, and I said, is this a way for us to out ourselves to the rest of this building? Or we can be sabotaged and stuff like that. And they're like, no, this is a way that you can report stuff that's like happening to you. And so it was crazy. It was like a lot of things. I found out something like 6 months ago. A guy got fired because he basically said a lot of transphobic things about me, but never to my face, but to other people. They immediately fired him.
As it should be.
Yes. So it was things like that, that I was like, wow, it's great. I can come out here. And so it's like,
well, it's really, you know, you can do your job well when you get the good support from leadership.
Yeah.
And like people ask me like that all the time is like, why am I able to do this podcast or be successful at the jobs that I have? And I'm like, only because I stand on the shoulders of giants, because I get love and support from the leadership in the various positions I am. And I'm not able to be fully my authentic self without that support. And it makes all the difference. Like when it's so beautiful to see someone blossom in a workplace environment when they get the support that they need.
Totally. I agree.
And you are part of that support, you know, and now you're able to pass along the love and kindness that you've received in the past to somebody else.
Oh yeah, totally. So like at work, we had this trans girl who was at work. We just became really close, and I noticed that her name badge didn't have the name that she wanted to be called. And it had her birth name, and I was like, you know, you can get them to change your name. You don't have to have it legally changed. And she's like, well, I've tried, because she worked at another building and then transferred to our building. And I said, oh, honey, no. So I put her to connections and I went to HR and I said, you got to get her name changed. I said, there's other people here that are not even trans or anything, and they can change their name to whatever the hell they want. They can change their name to their nickname for, you know what I'm saying? So it was like, why can't she change her name? And she was just so ecstatic that I was able to do that. And then she got to transfer back to the building that she came from, because they gave her a hard time at the other building. And eventually she got to transfer back to that building and just,
I just got to see
her grow.
That's great.
Sabrina.
I remember when you lived in Chicago, if I remember correctly, you said you went to the DMV and you had the M marker on your driver's license. And this is before any legislation was passed, and you just kind of looked at the person, and he was like, let me fix that for you.
Yes, it was this old, see, so I went to DMV after I got my name changed, and so I went to Social Security, and I went to DMV, because that's what Raina Valentino told me to do. She's like, go to Social Security, and then go across the street to DMV, and get it all changed. So I walk into DMV out in like, I think it was like in Lombard or Glendale or something in the suburbs of Chicago. And I go in there and I go, I need to change my name. And the old man goes, he looked at the paper and he looked at my ID, and then he looked at me and he goes, they made a mistake. They should have an M down here on your ID. Did you know that? And I said, no.
They should have
He said they put an M and should be an F.
He's like, you didn't know that there's an M on your ID? And I said, no. And literally, I'm changing my name from Travis to Kennedy on my ID. And he's not getting the M and the F. And so he goes, he changed it. And Raina, everybody always told me that was hard to do. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And I was like, okay. So it was fine.
So do you think this person was an ally, or do you just think he was just kind of like, didn't know kind of what was happening?
He was an old man that was clueless. But it's fine. It was great. It was like, oh, I got something. It was like something was given to me. So then I moved back to Texas. And so for like 3 or 4 years trying to get my ID changed in the state of Texas, because I happened to once live in Texas under a different name. Anytime they pulled up my Social Security, it came up as Travis and not Kennedy. So they wanted a legal document from a court saying that my gender has been changed. So I had to fight that and deal with that. And I was like, I'm not paying all this money to go to court for my gender marker to be changed when everything on everything I have, my gender marker's changed, my passport, everything. The government looks at me as a female. Why can't the state of Texas do that? And so I had to go through a law firm that did pro bono work, and they wrote up the paperwork, and I sent it to Austin to a judge. And it took about a year for them to actually look at it. And they finally looked at it, and the judge was like, well, he basically was like, you've already been living like this. Everything's changed, but the state of Texas is being stupid. So he was just like, here, he signed it, and it was just like nothing. But there's so many trans people that don't have that luxury that I've had. I've always had the being in the right place at the right time, or doing the thing at the right place at the right time. In my whole life and my whole career, it's always been shaped and molded by trans women who have molded me as a trans person. So everything I do and know is owed to by trans women of color. Here's how I look at it. So when I was in Houston doing drag, I had a drag family. And then I left Houston and went to Chicago and transitioned. And that's how I met Raina and Angelique. And it became this whole thing. I was adopted into a whole nother drag family. So in a lot of ways, I have two drag families, but one, like my Houston family, is more so they know the old part of me, whereas Angelique and the Monroes, it was forming me to be on stage, whereas my Houston persona taught me how to do makeup and dress, and then Chicago taught me how to be an entertainer.
I used to have so much fun hanging out with you and Raina in the clubs. And just going around and causing a commotion, and you would pull out your video camera and just start filming shit. And it was really just a wonderful time to be alive and to be able to be around. And, you know, I miss those days terribly because there was a lot of freedom there.
Oh, yeah. It's like I tell my husband, it's like people always go, do you miss Chicago? I miss Chicago tremendously for the simple fact that I miss my friends that I created there, because I moved to Chicago not knowing a soul. I left Chicago knowing so many wonderful people and that I call my friends to this day. Chicago is such a beautiful city. It's so beautiful. It's so different. It's so unique. And that's why I would tell my husband about the club scene. Just for example, like going to the Green Dolphin on a Monday night to just listen to house music and dance. Anymore.
I know.
It's so heartbreaking. But you know what I'm saying? But you know what I'm saying? It's that sort of thing. It's like, you could, like, for me, back in that day, it's like, I never had to wait in a line to go into a bar or a club. Like, someone knew who you were, and you got put into the club. You didn't pay an entry fee. You didn't have to do all that stuff. Like, it was like that. That was, like, those days. It's like, so now, I see so many bars and gay clubs just disappearing or being reformed or whatever. And it's just like, and you see drag shows that are all about hiring RuPaul's girls. And there's something about Trinity, the Tuck, right? Isn't that, am I right?
From RuPaul's Drag Race? Trinity the Tuck Taylor. TTT.
Yes. Yes. Trinity, who I admire, is she's always talking about tip your local entertainers, anywhere she's at. I see a video, she's talking about tip your local entertainer, support drag. That's stuff that is just priceless to me. And so drag in a lot of ways is, you know, I don't do drag to make lots of money. And to me, it's never been about money. It's about just being able to perform and express yourself. Mm-hmm. And I may be making $50 for a booking when the RuPaul girl that comes into town from the new season has not even been seen on TV, and she's getting her full booking fee at a bar down the street. So
what is that full booking fee these days?
I'm not sure. It's a lot. I don't know exactly.
Let go of my chicken wing.
Diva. Diva.
But you know what I'm saying? There was a girl from this season come and appear at a club on Friday night. No one knows who she is. She wasn't even on the first episode either. So you don't even know who she is. Like, you don't even get to know her. They did a viewing and then had her perform. And it's like, but we don't even know who she is.
Well, did people turn out to see her?
I don't know. I didn't get to go.
See them before they become hot.
Yeah, I guess.
That's part of the thing about it is like, you know, I think the positive thing that I see down the highway is that we're going to start seeing other ways for marginalized artists to be celebrated and lifted. And so if RuPaul's Drag Race this season really, Mark thinks that there's a,
I'm just saying,
there's
we'll
a
see.
Secret there transgender titty queen.
I'm hoping
hiding in
because you know they can only disappoint us for so long. Eventually, they're going to have to answer that call, and that call is
liberate the breasts.
Yes,
I agree. I hope so. I mean, you know, I've always admired RuPaul. There's some things RuPaul does that I don't agree with or things he says, but he's also, I've also, some of the queens that come from the show, I feel like do so much good for so many things. I mean, for example, look at Nina West. She's very vocal about things. She was an activist before she went on the show. So it was great to see someone like her who, I've always idolized and admired from afar. I've never met her, but my husband used to be friends with her. And so when he lived in Columbus. So those are the kind of things that, you know, I like seeing. But there's queens like Alaska, who I feel like is doing a lot of things special for not. I mean, she had a contest in L.A. that featured trans women performers and drag queens and club king. Yeah, she just did a whole different thing. And I admire stuff like that, you know. So
listen, you know, as long as you can create a path to celebrate the misfits, the square pegs in the round hold world, the gender nonconformists, the eccentrics, the children who sparkle and beat to a different drum, that's all we can really ask for. And when you're not able to do that anymore, and all the people that you have on your show, whether they're, you know, a podcast or RuPaul's Drag Race is just a clone of somebody else, then it,
true,
it makes us not want to be so passionate about it, you know? So,
no,
so to me, it's like, if Drag Race wants to stay in business, they gotta do it, or I'll see you at the Museum of Television.
Well, and that's what I thought the Dragula was going to be like, and then I feel like Dragula started to convert to be like RuPaul's Drag Race, and I was just
like this third season with Landon.
No,
Sider.
I had to turn. I actually just turned it off. I was just like, I felt like it was forced. I felt like some of the queens on the show were forcing their to be in that box of weird when they're not really weird. I don't know. I just, and just the scope of how it was filmed. Season two, like, we dived into a little bit better production than we did in season one. So I didn't mind season two so much. But season three, I was just like, oh, my God, here we are. We're going to go in a workroom just like we do on RuPaul's. Not like season one where we go in this tiny ass dressing room and it's seedy and it looks like a dump. And we're going to talk about each other.
Well, but Vivacious feels very strong. My friend Vivacious from RuPaul's Drag Race, she feels very strongly about the fact that they physically torture the drag queens.
She won't watch it.
She won't want to watch it because of it. And part of me is like,
like fear. It's like, what is that? Fear factor. What was that? Fear factor. And I drag queens.
Landon Sider, who's a drag king, one of the first challenges that they had was to eat a goblet full of live spiders.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Like, and part of it is like, what does this have to do with anything? But, you know,
I know
it is. It gets people tuning in, and I think it's fun. And I do feel like the Boulay brothers, in their heart, in their core, really understand that, you know, drag is art and art is subjective. They say that in every episode. And
yeah.
And I think it's a,
I do like that.
They have a good head on their shoulders and a good heart. And I feel like they're more amenable to figure things out. But I, you know, part of me is like, it's a big world. The market is still not super saturated. It's still enormous.
Oh no.
And well, do for your example, work. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look at Peaches, for example. I remember when Peaches was on the show and we would talk to Peaches and she'd be doing these shows that are like crazy in San Francisco. And now you look at her and she has all these RuPaul girls with her on the stage doing these shows, and they're selling out and they're traveling and they're touring and they're doing things that probably Peaches never even thought of before. I mean, so in that way, like when I see that or when I watch Dragula and I see her judging, I'm just like, oh, I know Peaches. I don't know Peaches. Like, we're not like,
she knows you. You know what I'm saying? If you went to see her at a show, she would remember you for sure.
She might even put you on the guest list.
Oh,
well, you can't speak for Peaches, but you can ask to be put on the guest list.
Yes, but I love Peaches. So when I see stuff, I'm just like, ooh, if she comes close to me, yes. And so those are kind of things that was the thing. Like Margaret Cho, when I interviewed her the second time, which was years later, she remembered me. She knew who I was. She was like, here, I'm gonna put you in connection with Cyndi Lauper's people, so you can try to get Cyndi Lauper. And I almost had Cyndi Lauper, and she had something happen or something came up or whatever, and I couldn't. But you think about that, like you said earlier, how those all came into play. Like, who could you do that with now? It's like, probably pull a teeth to even ask a RuPaul girl if they want to come be on your podcast.
Yeah, even the first eliminated queens have contracts preventing them from doing all kinds of shit. And you're just like, girl, you shouldn't sign that contract. But you know,
you can't say shit.
Yeah, and part of it is like, listen, you know what, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. I don't hold it against anyone, but you think
RuPaul, I don't either,
signing that contract herself, hell no.
No ma'am. And it's like you know, Jujubee hosted the Transgender Erotic Awards for like 3 years, and I got to work with her, and I got to get a lot of insight about the RuPaul process. And I know she told me things that you're not even allowed to say even these many years later, like the secrets and stuff like that. She's like, I could never go public and talk about things, but
well,
she
told nothing, me like nothing the, really. All these, I'll tell you this. There's a lot of like people going, I can't talk about this and that on the production. I'm like, I don't think it's a secret how reality TV shows work anymore.
Work. Yeah, I know.
You know, and so anybody who feels like if your conversation is about, you know, centered around how RuPaul's Drag Race is failing trans women, or if your conversation is about the mechanisms of reality TV show, you're not doing it right. It has to be about your story, your journey as an artist, the work that you make outside of that show. And that's really what we were interested in. I don't want to hear about which cameraman had sex with Willem. I don't really care.
What?
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care about that, you know, and you know, for somebody to think that that's important or interesting, I think they don't understand what drag queens are about to begin with.
No, I agree. I agree. And I think, and people always go, how can you as a trans person watch RuPaul's Drag Race? I'm like, I'm watching it for entertainment. I'm not watching it because I'm mad because there's not a trans person on the show. I look at it like this, that, you know, eventually something's going to happen. It's going to be another show is formed or something's going to come out of it. Maybe not RuPaul, maybe something else. But I look at it like this, is that you have to just like, the problem is we want to attack every little thing nowadays. And we want to attack each other in our own community. And we don't want to sit down and try to find the love between everything and the love that and the love that was my dog, yes.
Oh,
and the love between us as people and as humans. And that's another reason why I just wanted to come back and do the show with you guys, is because yes, we had a falling out, but did I ever hate you guys? No.
Well, I was mad about something. About it. You did sound pretty strong.
Yes, I did. I was probably really strong at the time. But, you know, now it's like, you know, I have lots of love for exactly what you did because I owe a lot of things to being on that show. I owe friendships that I have because of that show. So it's like, I cannot deny that show. And as much as I wanted to protest it, you know, there's a little part of me that always would go listen to it even when I was mad, just because I wanted to listen. I think it's because I always wanted to hear Fausto's voice, because there's something about Fausto's voice and
so moving and sweet.
You know, you and I, this podcast is over.
You and I are connected forever in a deep cosmic way, and it's we're we're just attached and on a subatomic level.
Yeah, and I have to say, I do love Mark. I loved going out to eat. We'd go out to eat.
We used to go to Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen. But what about that diner we used to go sit at the eat?
The Golden Nugget. One,
yes, we used to go to the Golden Nugget all the time. I loved that. We had
what did we do at the Golden Nugget? We used to get kicked out of those places.
No,
the thing was that Fausto would pull out his camera and start asking us, take pictures of me and Mark together, or let's talk about something that we can put on the line.
We were eating ice cream cones, soft serve ice creams, and I was like, do it sexy. You were not a porn star at this time, you know. This is Kennedy.
Yes, I was very sexual still though, so I was like expressing myself, but yeah, the world. So I just have to say that's what I want to see. I just want to see, I would love to see like everybody not hate each other and just like just embrace all the differences that we have as queer people, gay people, non-binary, trans people, whatever it is. It's like you got to find that common bond. You're all fighting for a good cause and you're all human beings. It's like that's where everything lies. You know, this year I'll turn 40, so it's kind of like I've spent half of my life as a trans woman and I've seen so many things change. It's like I tell young trans people, I tell them stories about, you know, the things I had to do to transition and get pills and all this stuff. And they're just like, wow, you had to do that? Yes, I had to do that. And it wasn't fair, but I also look at it as like, wow, I didn't have anything handed to me in the sense that I had to work for it. And so I feel like my transition is, in a sense, you know, I got lucky. I was, like I said, I was in the right place at the right time. Always meet the right people that helped them shape and mold me.
So you consider yourself a very lucky person.
Oh, yeah, I'm very lucky. I remember sometimes after I told my family I transitioned, my grandma would be watching Law and Order all the time, and some trans character would be on there murdered, and she'd call me and go, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, why? She's like, because there's a trans person on Law and Order dead, and I'm worried about you. Mm. I mean,
that's
like
beautiful,
I said,
that she would care about you like that.
But it's like I tell my grandma, I mean, I could write a book, I told my grandma one day, she got mad at me, and I said, you know nothing about how hard my life has been. And I said, I've had a gun put to my head. I said, I've been robbed. I've been molested. I've been raped. I've been homeless. So, but I've never let those horrible things that happened to me reflect how I live my life, or I'm always trying to be positive, even when I'm not in that frame of mind. I try to just do my life. And sometimes it's very hard, but we go back to it. And that's why I think Kings and Queens and this whole album is, it's about that for me. It's about the comeback, but also it's about giving birth to a different generation, something that I was taught and how I look at my life, you know. So for me, I have no shame of being born a boy, or my birth name and stuff like that. So for me, it's like, I love where I came from and where I'm going and where I've been. So that's what the comeback album is going to be about. It's going to be some fun stuff, but it's also going to be some things that I talk about or sing about that are really impactful in a sense that I want people to hear it.
Kennedy, thank you so much for talking to us. I know you got to get to work today.
Thank you. Yes, I do.
I didn't expect this to go 2 hours, but I sure am glad it did.
I know.
I think we're going to have to do a two-parter.
Yes, anytime.
It's until super-sized, honey, for your pleasure. It is.
And I just want to tell all the Feast of Fun fans who still contact me or follow me. It's very special that they still follow me throughout these years. Because it's a part of who I am. It's a part of a great time in my life that I had. And so I'm glad.
Thank you for saying that. And I'm sure the audience really appreciates that. And it really warms my heart to hear you say that. Because I really, you know, our audience really is an incredible audience. And we wouldn't be able to
talk to
somebody like you. I mean, what was that, 12, 13 years ago? And then to still be here 12, 13 years later to reconnect with you in this way. Now, we've been friends on Facebook probably 4 or 5 years now. But it was like, It was so nice to get you back on the podcast. And to be able to, to reminisce about old times and just to talk about your amazing journey as an artist, as a creator of content, as a drag queen, as a trans advocate. It makes me proud to know you.
Thank you. I'm proud to know you guys because y'all also are innovators and have launched things for a lot of people and done things, creators as yourselves, you know, and that's what's great. About us.
I wish we could go get a soft serve ice cream right now.
I know. And you know what? When I come to Chicago to visit, we are going to go get that.
And we found a gelato place that does dip cones like Dairy Queen does.
Ooh, I love gelato.
So it's the fancy schmancy ice cream, but with the
the dip.
The dip, yes. I'm such a big fan of the dips, you know?
Yes, me too.
Even though it's just mostly wax with a little bit of chocolate in it, I love it.
I do too.
Kennedy, thank you so much for also mentoring so many young people over the years at your job and as a trans woman out in the world. I think, you know, we don't thank people, LGBTQ people in workplace environments and corporate environments enough. And I really, you know, as somebody who shares a similar role as you do, I really appreciate what you do for the people in your job.
Thank you. I do too. I just hope people have always mentored me and helped me. I'm like, that's the best thing I can give someone is mentor them. If it's in drag or if it's in transitioning or if it's in questions about life, it's just like, I could tell you my story. I don't think it's going to be your story, but if it helps you, I think we all learn from everybody else. And I just feel like being a mentor is something I was meant to be, but also so many people influenced me and mentored me. So it's the best thing to do is that we give back to our own people and our own community. And, you know, you never know when someone's struggling to find themselves and maybe something you did made them see something in them. I know in porn, I always got told that is that, you know what? I was always told I was ugly or I was fat or something. And watching you on film just made me realize that, okay, I can love myself for who I am. And that's something I took away from the adult world was it didn't matter what size my body was because I fluctuated in weight during my 8 or 9 years in the industry. I never really was ashamed of my body at any point. I had no problem being naked in front of people. And so that was the thing that I learned. And the reason why I wanted to say stuff about it is because for so long, you can still to this day, drag pageants or drag queens can find out that you do porn or did porn. And they're like, oh, for real? That's gross. But they're on Twitter hunting down those gay boys on the apps, hoping that they...
Hell yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like it's okay for a gay man to be a porn star, but it's not okay for a trans woman to be a porn star. And there's where a lot of the things I've been quiet for so long about not intertwining Kennedy with my adult career, because I was like, it's going to ruin me if I ever want to do something down the road. And I've just come to a point in my life where I don't care no more. And I want to be that mentor to somebody. I want someone ask me about the porn industry, I'll tell them the gritty, true facts about it. And I never sugarcoat it.
And girlfriend, it's the same way with anything. Scratch the surface. Please come back again soon.
I will.
Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you guys. I love you guys. And thank you. And I love you. And I think that what you've done too is amazing. And I can't wait to see what happens down the road.
Me too.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
Kennedy.
Kennedy Monroe lives in the suburbs of Houston, Texas, in the cute little town of Tomball, Texas.
Darling. In an RV, building her own home with her husband.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Did you hear the birds in the background?
And the dog.
That's such a great... I'm so happy. And I hope that you guys are as heartwarmed as we are right now. And I'm, you know, there are many times during this conversation that we had with Kennedy where I was like moved to tears about it. It might be just, you know, medication having a reaction.
Well, it's, you know, it was a magical time. And especially, you know, when I think about her, I think about her with Raina Valentino, who is a good friend. And sorry, we lost her. She died. She was living with HIV and AIDS for a long time. And I know her organs failed. I'm not sure exactly what caused her death, but I'm sure that probably HIV and AIDS was involved in it somehow.
One of the last things Raina Valentino did was to come and do a podcast with us here in Chicago. And for people who don't know who Raina Valentino, well, she was a very much loved and celebrated drag entertainer, trans pioneer, trans advocate. She spoke many times of the gay and lesbian community. The Gay and Lesbian Transgender Bisexual Community Center here in Chicago about her experiences. Mm. And
she was striking. She was 6'2".
She's gorgeous. Just
a gorgeous Afro-Latino Puerto Rican Chicagoan.
And so we had invited Raina to come and do a podcast with us one last time. And she showed up at our home.
Ringing the buzzer,
but she was in a wheelchair.
We didn't realize she was in a wheelchair. And she's just like, it's okay, I'll crawl up the stairs. And you know what? She crawled up the gut. Somebody dropped her off. She made it to the door, rang the buzzer, and was like, I need help coming
upstairs. I'm glad we were home.
You know? And I was just like, why? And we had no idea at that point in time. And that's another thing. It's like, she had hurt her knee. Something happened. She didn't go to the doctor. And the next thing you know, she couldn't walk anymore because... Yeah. She didn't have access to good health care.
Photos of Raina Valentino that you see on her Facebook memorial page now are the photos that we were able to take that day when she came in dressed up to the nines, but in a wheelchair to come tape the podcast.
Came up to the second floor of our apartment.
Studio,
and
yeah.
Came here and, you know, the determination she had. Yeah, I was very...
And that's moved. Something that we can all... bring it into our lives. You know, maybe not all of us obviously are drag entertainers or trans or non-binary people, or even, you know, there are a lot of heterosexual people who listen to the show. You can learn a lot about just listening to the stories of these amazing people and how they may not have always overcome some of the obstacles that they did, but they still manage to have a sense of optimism, a sense of resilience, the hustle with a capital H, honey.
Well, and being your authentic self, you know, no matter who you are, that strive to present yourself to the world as who you are is very important.
You know, and sometimes when we tell people to be authentic selves, there's a little confusion about it. Is it's okay to pretend to be somebody else when you're trying to figure out who you are. And in fact, Halloween and costumes and drag and theater and performance art can be a wonderful resource for somebody who's trying to find their voice. And that's the magic of art. The magic of self-expression is that you can be anybody you want to be. And if tomorrow you want to be somebody else, that's okay too. Who you are is good enough.
That certainly is true.
I hope that everybody who may have had a falling out with us in the past is able to listen to this show, and I hope that you guys are in a good place and that your hearts are healed and that you're surrounded by love and happiness and creativity. And if you ever want to have a conversation with us, we are here for you.
Mm-hmm.
We're more than happy to listen and come to some understanding of what went wrong. We're never going to ever close the door on anyone because everybody is welcome in the progressive movement.
That's
even
right.
The Bloomberg bros.
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feasttofun.com/plus. Your contribution to the show is what makes it happen.
We rely on your support. We're going to be reposting the podcast with Raina Valentino on our Feast of Fun Plus and our Patreon pages, patreon.com/feastoffun. And you can also just scroll back into our histories. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, just go back way back in the seasons.
Way back.
To listen to Raina Valentino's last podcast with us. And we have fabulous t-shirts on our store, feastoffun.com/store. We're on social media, Feast of Fun, BGC, Instagram, Snapchat, Grindr, Scruff. Not really.
Aww.
But we are on Twitter and YouTube and Instagram and Facebook. Join our groups at Feast of Fun on Facebook and continue the conversation with everyone. Again, thank you, Kennedy Monroe.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. We're going to leave you with her first song here, Voluptuous Diva. Mm. Take it away, Diva.
Diva. Let's go have chicken wing.
Mesmerize the crowd. Very proud. Mesmerize the crowd. Very proud. Mesmerize the crowd. What size was that? 22, 18, 34, 16, 24. XXL. Come on, girls.